Radio, and it's time for the podcast that addresses issues for people 50 and older. It's time for I'm Just Saying 50 with Juanita. Juanita brings a new spin to the statement I'm older and I'm fabulous. So get ready for some fun, information, and a complete interaction with guests and listeners. Get ready, for I'm Just Saying 50. And now, here's Juanita.
Welcome, welcome to I Am Just Saying 50 with Juanita, the podcast number 104. I am so happy that I have my Facebook friends listening, watching. Again, if you want to hear this show, this is a very important show. This is our men's pre-Father's Day show, and this is something very dear to me, the show that we're doing. Give me a call, 888-627-6008 is the number to call if you want to interact with the program host or the guest. And also, if you want to hear the show live, you can log on to bbsradio.com. You'll see my face. You'll see me there. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing you guys and hearing you guys and talking about men's health issue. And Doug, if you're listening right now, because this is a live show and I do believe in interacting with Doug, you can call Nieswa now. He wants to hear the show now. He just sent me a message. So if you can call him now and just put him into the system, that would be great. So today, you know, this is something that I know a lot of guys, you know, just from male friends of mine have said to me that the whole issue discussing prostate cancer and prostate cancer screening is such a, I guess I'm going to take a cue from Dr. Gandhi, who is one of our guests, the caveman approach to checking for prostate cancer. So our first guest is going to be, is Dr. Gandhi. He is a urologist at ANOVA. And ANOVA is a big sponsor of the Zero Cancer Walk on Father's Day. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Gandhi without further ado. Welcome to I'm Just Saying 50.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So, you know, I started off in saying, you know, that a lot of guys, they don't want to go through the process of getting checked because, you know, and this show is raw. This show is, you know, I could kind of say whatever I want to say, but the whole fingered approach, the whole, you know, the intrusion of that area or whatever, but you're going to tell us that that's not always the case. We can get, or they can get checked out other ways.
So there's many ways that men can get checked nowadays. Kind of in the past, it's always been, you know, the dreaded finger exam and the PSA blood test. Now, there were some government recommendations that came out in 2012 that actually said that the PSA blood test was not needed. And a lot of doctors interpreted that as, well, the blood test isn't needed, which means the finger test isn't needed also. And that's not truly the case. The finger exam really helps us to identify prostate cancer that may be very aggressive, even if the blood test is normal. So it's still a very important part, but it's something that's typically done about once or twice a year. We now have newer blood tests. We also have some urine tests, which we can also use to try and find out someone's risk for prostate cancer. And we also have new imaging tests like MRI that really help to gauge what someone's risk is for developing prostate cancer.
So now, what are the signs? Like, you know, if someone is there, like a sign that a guy or some type of symptoms that someone a male is experiencing, and that may be like an indication that, you know, maybe there is an issue with the prostate.
So what people really need to understand is that prostate cancer may not have any signs or symptoms. So you may feel great. You may be doing well, and the only thing that's abnormal is either the exam or your blood test. So that's one thing that makes it difficult for men to come into to see the doctor, because they feel perfectly fine, that they're like, there's no way I could potentially have cancer when I feel this good. Some symptoms that the prostate may have would be if you wake up at night to go urinate, if you feel like you're urinating often, if you feel like you have a weak stream. The analogy I tell people, I say, if it's not strong like a fire hose or like you're 18 again, it may be quite weak. So these are signs of more of an enlarged prostate, but they also can be a sign of very advanced cancer. But generally speaking, there are no symptoms, especially for prostate cancer.
So basically, men, you know, and you just heard Dr. Gandhi say, This test, you didn't say this, but I'm saying this, you should definitely go to your doctor and make sure that everything is okay. But, you know, guys, and I know you don't like going to the doctor, you don't like to get, the first sign that you see something that's wrong, you panic, but you still won't see or visit a physician to see what's going on. Men should get this tested every year, every six years, every 2 years, every time you go for a physical?
Well, so it depends on risk factors. So let me give you a couple scenarios. Just for the, average risk generalized man, they should go visit, with their primary care physician or their urologist for prostate cancer screening every 1 to 2 years, starting at about the age of 50 or 55.
Okay.
Now, for men who have higher risk factors, such as African-American race or a positive family history for prostate cancer, such as in their father or brother, a first-degree relative, they are at a higher risk for developing prostate cancer, so they should be screened much earlier and slightly more aggressively. So again, that may be that, they may start at age 45 or even, age 50. They may need to be checked every year. So again, the most important part is you've got to go see the doctor to know what your risk status is and have that conversation with your doctor to truly find out what your risk is. One of the best quotes I ever heard was, and this came from one of my patients, but men are afraid to, come see the urologist because we deal with issues that involve, urination and sexuality. And so sometimes that's a little daunting. And he was telling me, he was like, it takes a man to be a man and, to truly get checked to know that I'm going to be okay. I'm okay. I can be a man for my family, whether it's for, your wife, your kids, your parents, whoever it is. But he says it takes a man to be a man to go see the doctor.
And, I am so glad you just said that, doctor, because someone just, a friend of mine, he just sent me a message on Facebook Live, and he said that his dad is a sole survivor of prostate cancer. And so he keeps up, and he says, I'm a real man who's not afraid of doctors. And that's so important to pass on. The other, and I'm going to go there, but I'm thinking, and guys, you can let me know, a lot of men don't want to do this because of the what's going to happen after, like after it's done or after, you find it, oh, it's there, I get treated, then after, I won't be able to perform sexually. That part of my life is over and done. That'll never happen again. Is that true?
So the fear with that is, when people have treatment for prostate cancer, there's always an increased risk of what people dread, and that is problems with urine leakage and problems with sexual function.
Right.
And that's due to, the intimacy of the prostate and how this is related, and that can be with either surgery or even radiation. The treatment patterns have evolved so much to where we are able to reduce those risks, but they still exist. One of the things I spend a lot of time talking with men about is if we actually detect cancer early, there's a possibility that we can watch this cancer to make sure it's not aggressive and then prevent those side effects from happening, but know that if anything changes, we can still cure the cancer so that you can live a long and fulfilled life. So there are a lot of different options that we have now, but even men who have had treatment, we have a lot of different treatment options to help them for, you know, preventing or minimizing any sort of urine leakage or even any sexual dysfunction.
So you talked about treatment, and someone just asked me, you know, people know that it exists, advanced treatment. Give us some of the advanced treatment options for guys who may have it and now they have to seek a urologist and they have to start getting treatment.
So the treatments for prostate cancer all depend on the various levels of prostate
right.
cancer. So, you know, there's very early stage prostate cancer. We call that, you know, very low risk or low risk prostate cancer. There's intermediate risk prostate cancer, and there's also high risk or very high risk, which is aggressive prostate cancer. So depending on where you fall in those categories will determine what treatment options are available to you.
Okay.
In general, we have what's called active surveillance, where we're watching your prostate cancer with the blood test, the PSA, with the finger exam called the digital rectal exam. And we're doing a biopsy every 1 to 1.5 years to see if this cancer is being reclassified or progressing to something different. The typical treatments people hear about are the robotic prostatectomy. That's
right.
where we use a minimally invasive robot, which, contrary to popular belief, you know, I can't sit in the back and have a coffee while the robot does the work. I'm still doing the work. The robot just lets me, through small incisions, it's like my hands are inside to be able to
Uh-oh.
Remove the prostate. And this
Uh-oh.
Allows men to recover much quicker. And typically we have men have their surgery one day and they're leaving the hospital the next day.
And robotics are very precise, correct?
So with the robot, it allows us to have such great magnification and also see the prostate in three dimensions. So I think, like I had described before, it's similar to playing a video game. And so I always tell my mom, you know, she gets on me when I was a kid and saying, you know, you play so many video games, when will that amount to anything? And I tell her I use that almost every day.
Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh.
And so
okay.
We also,
you know,
and then there's also radiation treatment.
Right.
Well.
I was going to ask you about that.
So there's, you know, a lot of radiation treatments that are available, and they've also become more refined. There's different treatment options, including, like, placing radioactive seeds inside the prostate. There's kind of using X-ray therapy outside the prostate. There's newer treatments such as CyberKnife or even proton therapy. So even with radiation, we're developing so much technology to really refine how well we can treat the prostate. And then
you mentioned one thing that I meant to ask and touch on. And Doug, again, if you're hearing me, if you can bring Niaswa into the conversation because he wants to hear it too. He just sent me a message. You mentioned something about African Americans or black men are a higher risk. Why is that?
That's the million-dollar question. You know, there's a lot of research going into assessing the genetics behind this to find out why are African American men at such a higher risk. They're at a higher risk for developing prostate cancer, but they're also at a higher risk for dying of prostate cancer. And you know, the story I tell people is if I had a 65-year-old white man and a 65-year-old black man, both of them had a PSA blood test of 5, and they both underwent a biopsy for prostate cancer, the Caucasian gentleman, his prostate cancer would likely come back less aggressive than the African American. And that's just what we've seen. And so there is a lot of research going into the genetics, but this harps on the benefits of early detection and screening. But we also see that African American men are the ones who aren't going to see the doctor early, and then that's why we really try to get the word out. But so much has been looked at this, and so much also plays a role with diet. We found that the American diet, especially red meat, fried foods, those can increase just your overall cancer risk as well.
Really?
Yeah, so there's definitely a lot of research trying to find out if there's specific causes, but there have been studies showing that men who are on an Asian rice-based diet have a lower cancer risk, and then when they move here and they take up the traditional Western American diet, their cancer risk increases just due to those dietary changes.
Oh, my gosh. You are listening to I'm Just Saying 50 with Juanita on BBSRadio.com. It's our Men's Pre-Father's Day podcast. Again, if you want to interact with the guest or myself, you can give me a call at 888-627-6008. We are live streaming on Facebook, and I'm getting a lot of questions from you guys, so I appreciate that. Thank you. Before I let the doctor go, you are the urologist at ANOVA, and ANOVA now is a big sponsor of the Zero Cancer Walk on Father's Day. Tell us how ANOVA got involved with this.
Yeah, so I'm a urologist with a group called Potomac Urology, and we are affiliated with ANOVA. And this was a race that, you know, we'll talk to Sean here in just a moment, but this is a race that's been organized by an organization called Zero, the End of Prostate Cancer, whose goal is to, you know, identify and kind of hopefully foster the first generation without prostate cancer. And so through awareness and these community events, we're really able to get the word out there. So I've become heavily involved with them. And through that relationship, we were able to partner with ANOVA to really facilitate this prostate cancer event that we have coming up this Sunday. And it's a large organization where we get, you know, a lot of men as well as their caregivers, their families, to form teams to really raise awareness about prostate cancer. And we have fun kids activities as well as we allow people to run the race, and we have music and a DJ. And we really try to make it a great family-friendly event. That this is currently National Men's Health Week, and it culminates on Father's Day. And what better day to celebrate, you know, your prostate cancer survivor, your men, your families, than on Father's Day with this great event?
I think that's perfect. I think it's perfect timing that it is a part of this week, and then it's part of Father's Day, because I think that's a great way of getting fathers, dads, sons, male, female, whoever. You know, don't be afraid. Just, you know, if you think something's wrong down there or whatever, just go get tested. You know, go visit Dr. Gandhi. You know, find out if there's nothing going on, and if there is something going on, you know, you can get the risk factors. There are all types of treatment out there. Early detection, of course, is the key, as Dr. Gandhi said. And there's so many different ways that you can get treated without feeling like, a death sentence or you're going someplace where, you know, it's just going to be just the worst case scenario. There's so many options. And Dr. Gandhi, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your very busy schedule to talk to my listeners and myself and educating us about prostate cancer.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you having me. I really commend you for doing this and talking about men's health issues and helping to raise awareness and getting the men checked.
Well, I do love men. No, let me start. I'm a man's girl. Now, let me start. And I want my men to be healthy. I am a stickler for that. So thank you so much, Dr. Gandhi. I really appreciate it.
What we learned is, you know, at least from the talks I've given, it's the men show up when the women tell them to. So,
like the men. How you doing, doctor? I like that. Thank you so much. Joining us now is Shawn Supers. What a great last name. Supers with Zero Cancer. She is the Mid-Atlantic Chapter Director, and she's going to talk to us about this wonderful run walk on Father's Day for Zero Cancer. Welcome, Shawn.
Hey, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with your listeners.
So what can we expect from this walk? I mean, Dr. Gandhi told us it's going to be music, it's going to be fun or whatever, but, you know, a lot of people don't run. Some people want to walk. I mean, you know, tell us about the run itself.
Well, yeah, first let me begin with what specifically Dr. Gandhi and I are working on is the nation's capital Zero Prostate Cancer Run Walk, which is on Father's Day, June 18th. However, for your listeners who may not live in the greater D.C. area, I do want everybody to know that we actually have 42 races across the country, and you can go to our website, zeroprostatecancerrun.org, for a list of all 42 cities and the dates that they're going to be happening. In fact, out in L.A., we have a race coming up in July. So while we're specifically talking about our Father's Day race, which is, of course, June 18th, this Sunday, it is Zero's flagship race for funding our nationwide programs to support the nearly 162,000 men who will be diagnosed with prostate cancer this year. And as Dr. Gandhi said, we have a little bit of something planned for everybody. So we call this the Zero Prostate Cancer Run/Walk. That means you can either run or walk the 5K route, or if a one-mile route is a little bit more your speed, you can do that. You can also do what I like to do, which is stand at the finish line and cheer on everybody who is doing the running.
That would be me.
So really, there's something for everyone. We need volunteers in all of our cities to make these events happen, so volunteering is also an option. And you know, this is our way of raising awareness for this cause. As you just found out from Dr. Gandhi, there are not necessarily any physical symptoms for this disease in the early stages when it's nearly 100% curable. So our goal is to reach as many men as possible, make sure that they know what their risk factors are and that they are taking their health care in an empowered fashion instead of, you know, kind of ignoring it and pushing it off to the side. We also, of course, raise money through these events. And as I said, for the DC race, this funds our nationwide programs. In particular, program that we have is called Zero 360. And I would really encourage all of your listeners to visit our website, zerocancer.org. You're going to find on there a wealth of information, from places that you can go to get free prostate cancer screenings, to, you know, what are the right questions to ask my doc. We even have like a little interview list that you can print off, because if you're like me, sometimes I get a little nervous when I go to the doctor and I forget to ask the questions that are on my mind before I go.
I love that.
You some tools to help you guide that conversation with your doctor, make sure that you're asking the right questions and that you're getting the answers, and you can take little notes on it and take it home with you where you can digest what they just shared with you, you know. If you need support, if you do get diagnosed with prostate cancer, we have an amazing program called Zero 360, and it's a free anonymous service that literally supports a man with his prostate cancer journey through every step of the process. Some people need assistance with navigating insurance forms and questions about what their patient rights are and what their coverage should be. We actually can assign a caseworker to help a gentleman in that scenario with and get the assistance that they need with that kind of paperwork. Sometimes fellas need some financial assistance. We definitely have resources to help gentlemen find financial assistance should they need it. And oftentimes, although they don't like to admit it, they also need emotional support. So we can also provide emotional support through the caseworker, or get you connected with one of thousands of prostate cancer support groups that happen across the country. So those are just a few examples of the programs that Zero is seeking to fund by raising money through the run walk that we're doing on Father's Day, June 18th in D.C.
Yeah, because that's what I was going to ask you. It's like, where does the money go? But you basically just answered the question, which
I just nipped that one in the bud, Juanita. I just told you exactly what you needed to know there. We are $50,000 $1,000 away from our goal right now for the DC race. So if your listeners can contribute, any amount is really appreciated. They can go to zeroprostatecancerrun.org/DC, click on the donate button, and make a contribution there today and help us reach our $200,000 goal.
Wow. And you talked about support also, and you talked about support for the person who is going through the treatment, but what about support for the person who is the caregiver?
Excellent question. So there are some, you know, some folks who really assist these gentlemen who are on their cancer journey. They're the wonderful caregivers, and caregivers can look many different ways. It can be a friend or a neighbor. It can be your wife or your sister or a loved one. And in many cases, hopefully, gentlemen have many family members and friends that they can rely on for support. Other gentlemen, especially senior gentlemen who are facing this kind of a battle, sometimes are in it alone, which is why we have that 0360 program to give them some support as well. Caregivers are heroes in our opinion as well, and new to the Run Walks this year, we are actually going to be acknowledging caregivers along with the patients and survivors in our recognition ceremony. That's a ceremony that happens at every one of the Run Walks that we do across the country. We like to call our prostate cancer patients and survivors zero heroes. And the gentlemen actually get a light blue-colored shirt and with an insignia on their sleeve that says Zero Hero. And in the recognition ceremony, we give them Zero Hero ball caps.
Wow.
We're also going to be inviting one caregiver to come to the stage this year to get recognition, and we have sashes for the caregivers. So hopefully the gentlemen will want to step forward to the front of the stage really proudly that they're cancer survivors and warriors, and that they'll, you know, invite a caregiver to come to the stage with them to be recognized and to share in, you know, that celebration of life that we're all there to celebrate on race day.
I think that is such an awesome idea to have both the person who is going through it and, of course, the person who is the caregiver, because, you know, a lot of people don't realize the sacrifices or the pain or, you know, whatever, because they're feeling as much pain as the person who's going through it. So I am so happy to hear about that part
of it. I'm excited about it, too. I really hope that that folks enjoy it. I know from the first couple of races that we've had this season that caregivers have proudly been wearing their sashes, and frankly, the survivors have really appreciated the opportunity to give them some recognition.
So if someone wants to get more information, because I think we ran out of time, about the run itself, how can they get more information? I know you gave it to us several times, but I want people to get it again. So how can we get more information?
Yeah, that's zeroprostatecancerrun.org. You can go there and you can find a listing of all of the run walks across the country and the specific websites to each of them.
Great. Sean Supers with Zero Cancer, thank you so much for being a part of I'm Just Saying 50 with Juanita and our pre-Father's Day podcast that I wanted to. I just wanted to put it out there. I wanted men to get this information because, like I told Dr. Gandhi, I do like men, and I want my men to stay healthy.
Well, Juanita, I really appreciate you having us on, and I would ask one more thing of your listeners.
Sure.
If they learned something today or if a message got reinforced for them, if they would go and share that important message with one other man in their life, they will help us reach that many more people and hopefully save some lives.
That is an excellent excellent ending to this. That thank you so much. That was perfect.
You bet, Juanita. Thank you very much for having us.
Oh, my pleasure. Now after Sherry and after Dr. After Sean and after Dr. Gandhi, we talked about prostate cancer and getting early testing and all that. So we got some men that are going to be joining us on the show. You know, the last time you all had sent me some notes saying that you really like that part of the show, the podcast. You like when I have these guys on the show, and particularly the ones that I have on today. We have a newbie that's on today. He's one of our newbies, but we have two of the originals. One, I'll be nice. He had something he had to do, so he was not able to join us. And of course, Chris was not available. He may have forgotten you told me that. But we have Yeswar. Okay, so Marcus and Jeff are not available yet. So we have me and Nieswa. Nieswa is with Omega Recording. Welcome, Nieswa.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Can you hear me? Okay, good.
Can
great.
You hear me?
I can. Thank you. I appreciate it.
So look, before the other guys get here, you and me, you know, I'm going to go get away from the prostate cancer because that was such a great half hour. But now I want to talk about being a father and being a father in these days and times. And you have a son.
I do.
How hard has that been now than it has been in the past? And I say that because of everything that male boys have to go through. Seems like it's a little bit more intense than it has been in it before.
Before we go any further, let your engineers know we have a little bit of a mix minus going on, and if they should know what that means. Anyway,
okay.
My child was born in the late 70s, so I wasn't as affected by what we're affected now. He's 38 years old. He's almost 40. So there are a lot of things that he and I speak about that didn't directly affect him, but he was born on the cusp of when it appeared as though there were a lot more single women raising their sons. And what the one thing that I can point to that was what I observed, and what I observed with more single women raising their sons, is that the relationship between the woman and the son often gets blurred, not physically but psychologically and emotionally, to the point that sometimes the boy thinks that he is his mother's man, and he's not. And sometimes the woman has exposed him to so much that she believes that she acts as if this is her man, and he's not. I had to deal with that with my son's mother. For example, she got married, and he was upset. And I asked him when he came to stay with me, I said, "Why are you upset?" He said, "Because she didn't ask me." I said, "What do you mean she didn't ask me?" She said, "Well, she asked me everything else. She didn't ask me if I minded her getting married." And I was taken aback. I didn't know what to say, and I just told him what I normally say. I say, parents will never acquiesce to the child. It's never going to happen, okay? She's grown. She's your mother. She did what she felt she had to do, because it's a relationship that she had with this man. It has nothing to do with your relationship with the man, but that was just window dressing at the time. But to answer your question, our relationship has grown over time, because for most of his life, I either was not around because I moved around a lot. I was in broadcasting, so I didn't get a chance to spend a lot of his development time with him. Or when he was born in Atlanta, I lived in Atlanta. Or when he was in Atlanta, I used to have him every other week, which is fine, but it doesn't give enough. The reason that there's the male and female chromosome go into making a child is because the male and female are supposed to help raise the child. That's the bottom line.
Well,
so
yeah,
anybody,
I mean, that is the bottom line. You know, I don't have kids, so I can't even imagine. You know, but I do know. I have lots of friends. I am I was a stepmother. I was a godmother, whatever, to lots of kids. Mostly they were female, never male. I just, before I go on, we have Marcus Pratt. He is on the line with us as well. Welcome, Marcus. It just seems to me that raising, and I keep saying sons, are just a little bit more harder these days than ever, because it's just so many things that you have to prepare your son to deal with when they go out just to go to the 7-Eleven.
Well, the thing, listen, everybody likes to point at is the physical, not the physical, but the appearance of the child, being that he's a black boy, black man, he's going to 7-Eleven, something could happen on the way to that. But what's more important is that for years we used to hear growing up that boys were easier to raise than girls. All you have to do with boys is just kind of let them go. There is nothing further from the truth. It is much harder to raise a young black boy. Well, I don't know if it's much harder. I didn't have to raise a woman. It's very challenging, put it that way, because there are a lot of emotional, psychological things that if you're not willing to speak with your son about or introduce to your son, they're going to have problems with a lot later.
Before you go on the A4, Marcus has a younger son. I believe your son is 15, Marcus?
Okay, yeah.
He's 13. Can you hear me?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
So he's 13
or 15?
Yes,
he's 13.
Okay,
he just turned 13.
So how has that been? I mean, how difficult in this society, in this world now, how hard has that been?
I think when it comes to raising a young male, my experience specifically as a young black male, the main problem that I tend to see is getting young males to understand the environment that they're in, and getting them to understand what's out there before it gets a chance to possibly be their downfall or detriment. Now, as the other gentleman, I forgot his name, was saying that,
hi, Marcus.
Yes, we've met. How you doing? Okay.
Good.
But I agree to a degree. They've made it seem so simple to basically neglect the needs of males, especially young males. And that's the only way to put it. It's a sophisticated, subtle neglect. We do have more needs. We do need to be attended to emotionally. And that's one thing they tend to think we don't have much going on in that area.
Well, because the conception is that, or the misconception, I don't know which way you can put it, but that most men are, you know, not an emotional creatures. You guys are not emotional creatures, that it's women who are the emotional creatures. It's women who, you know, cry at night. It's women who, you know, when we're having an issue, you know, we're the emotional. But correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's fine, because I tell my son all the time, he's telling me all the time, I said, look, it's like the sun and the moon. The woman is a reflection, allegedly, of the man. I said, women are all emotion. So therefore, when they feel emotion, they deal with it a lot better because that's their nature. I said, the thing with us is that it's not our nature to deal with emotion. I said, so that's what we have to deal with a lot better. I was very fortunate that my mother, when I was very young, when I would cry or get upset with her, she would say, well, what's wrong with you? I would say at time to time, you hurt my feelings. She said, no, I didn't. She said, if I were in control of your feelings, you'd always be happy. Life would always be great. She said, you're in control of your feelings. You have to make sure that you manage your feelings. Those feelings don't belong to anybody else but you. You have to be in control of those feelings. And she said that over and over and over again.
That's pretty profound. I like that.
It is.
Well, it's true. We are in control of our emotions. Also.
Well, yeah, we are in control of our emotions. But then, you know, speaking of the girl here, I mean, you know, we get upset over the littlest. I mean, we get upset over the littlest thing. I can say that because I'm a chick. But we try our best to be strong, and especially if we're supporting a man in our lives or whatever, we want to be strong for them as well.
Well, see, being strong doesn't mean you're not supposed to be emotional. See, that's the funny thing.
Thank you.
I'm sure Harriet Tubman cried a whole lot, you know? I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm sure she shed a lot of tears. So I don't know what and I'm sure Martin Luther King shed a lot of tears also. I mean, I don't think being strong means that you're not supposed to be emotional about it. The bottom line, I think, is always to make sure that you try to control those emotions as best as possible so that you can manage the outcome. But anyway, I'll shut up.
Well, no, getting off of that subject, because someone just chimed in and wanted me to talk about, the dreaded sexuality part of it, of the conversation. And I addressed that because of the we had our first half hour talking about prostate cancer.
Which was
and,
great.
You know, the side effects of, you know, if you get it and what happens. What if you don't have that support system afterwards if you are faced with that and you had to get the surgery? And the surgery, you know, you had the side effects for a while, and one of the side effects is impotence. How do you deal with that emotionally? I'll let Marcus go first, since you went first.
I'll let Marcus, yes, please let him go first, because I don't have no experience on that.
Oh, and there it is. Well, I didn't say you had to have experience. I'm just saying.
Yeah, can you? I'll let Marcus. Go ahead, Marcus.
Thank you. Thank you for opening up the floor for something that I'm totally stabbing in the dark on. But I could only imagine. I thank God that I don't have that type of experience so far, and hope to never have it. But I really couldn't imagine. Your sexuality for a man is not supposed to sum him up, but it's an important thing for a man. For him to no longer. Why?
Yeah, why? Why? Why is it so important?
Okay, now I don't want to be able to. Pardon me?
I think it depends on the man. I have a really good friend. I have three good friends and a relative who had the surgery. I have one friend who said recently, because he plays piano and he plays in a public setting, and he always has pictures of himself with these beautiful women. And I said, wow, man, you know, your wife must really trust you to be with these women. He said, she has to trust me because I can't do nothing. I said, what do you mean? He said, I have surgery, man. I can't do nothing. So I can't do nothing with her. I can't do nothing with him. I said, well, how do you feel about it? He said, look, I'm alive, okay? I'm able to enjoy her. I'm able to enjoy my grandchildren, and it's something that I had to accept. And my cousin said the same thing. He's like 10 years younger than me. Mm. He said, I'm alive. He said, and that's really all it comes down to.
But going back to you, Mr. Pratt, why is it so important?
Yeah. Well, again, your sexuality for a man is important, but it doesn't over-prioritize your life. So I think I wanted to definitely be able to say that part. Of course, you would miss it. Of course, you would feel some kind of way about it. And especially with the men being, I don't want to say more rational, but not holding on or not being as emotional, but more rational. I think the rationale should or would settle in, and you would also just come to appreciate some of the other things in life. Because, you know, prostate cancer is not the only thing that would slow your activity down anyway. So for a lot of people,
Well, I guess age, too.
Correct.
The other thing is that, you know, I think anything taken away from us after a point in our lives that we're used to is going to take some sort of adjustment. If I lost my hearing, if I lost my vision, if I lost the ability to walk, if any of those things happened to me, it would be not just the fact that I'm not able to quote unquote perform like I used to. The bottom line is, I can't get up the stairs. That's bad. My father had congestive heart failure, and he had gout. And when I took care of him and my mom in the last years of his life, I used to care. He was a strong guy. He was a car mechanic. I mean, this guy was like a muscular guy growing up. And I would watch him at the side of the bed. He was looking at his hands. And I said one day, I said, Daddy, what's wrong with you? Are you okay? He said, I'm fine. He said, I never thought my body would betray me. And that's the deal. Mm. If something gets taken from you that you normally have and you count on, I think that's the problem. That's what gets to be the emotional quandary. That's what I think. I don't know.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got a point. I mean, because, you know, women are, we reach our sexual peak out in our 50s. Mm-hmm. I mean, we realize we're like college girls. You know, looking for spring break USA. I'm just
hot damn. Oh, man.
We're like, where you at now, boo? Like, you stopping already? Come on. I ain't done. I'm at college spring break.
well, all I know is...
Because I got a lot of friends. I got a girlfriend, and she knows I'm talking about her. She's like in her 60s. And this girl got the libido of a 20.
Oh, wow.
So I guess, you know, what I'm saying is that, I mean, yeah, I guess you would be concerned about that. I mean, get back to my serious voice. But I guess
it's the loss of something.
Well, And also, in a society that puts such emphasis on your sexuality, it makes you feel like you're sitting on the sidelines. You're no longer as relevant or as useful. But that's not actually the truth. But that's just the pull of mainstream and how it would impact the way you feel about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it also depends on the way you've looked at yourself basically through life in general. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. You know, we're all responsible for the way we are. So either we take responsibility for it or we don't. And when we don't, we let somebody else define who and what we are. I don't know.
No.
Dating and getting older, how is that?
For who?
Dating
for both of you, and hopefully we'll get Jeff on here. If Doug, if you haven't been able to reach Jeff, he sent me a message. So I don't know if you can reach Jeff Ramirez, but hopefully he can join us soon. Yeah. What about
Marcus?
That?
Go ahead.
And there it is.
Dating and getting older. Okay.
Getting older. I mean, is it harder? Is it good? Is it? Are you still the same person? You go out, you see somebody. You want to date the world. I mean, you know, is it commitment? What?
I'm actually single myself at this time. I'm actually indulging a little bit into the dating, and it's just, you know, the older you get, you tend to not want to be into that particular scene.
The dating scene, the bar scene.
You're not comfortable with constantly exposing yourself to different people. When ultimately a lot of times nothing is going to come out of it other than a stranger has the opportunity to judge you or grade you. That's a level of degradation.
Well, that is true, though. I mean, when you get older, you do tend to want to stop that, the whole bar thing, the dating here. Here we go again. I mean, you get to that point you're absolutely right. And that's for women, too. You know, we get like that, too. We just think that men are not at that point yet. We just think that men, because someone just sent me a message, we think that men are always looking for, I'm not going to say what they said. No matter how old, I'm not going with it. But that's what we think.
Well, you know, go ahead.
No, go, brother. Go ahead. Shut up.
Okay. It's like, are you dating because you fell out of something that you wanted, or are you dating because you want to?
Right.
So, depending on how you entered into that particular arena, would also determine how you feel about it. If you came out of something bad and it was binding, you know, you might find dating refreshing,
or rebounding.
I don't think there's one way to sum it up. I just think it depends on the person and the situation.
Yeah. Who's you gonna say, Niaiswa?
Well, I mean, see, I've never been a club or bar person, but the bottom line is wherever you go, there's an opportunity for you to interact with people and connect with them. And the older I've gotten, the more I've just appreciated the ability to connect and like to communicate, because, I mean, there, you know, it depends on the kind of level of relationships you've had, and I've had plenty of them. So it's like at this point in my life, it's just a matter of, you know, if part of it, like I said in the last time when I was on your show, I just want to see what my stock is worth on the open market. It doesn't mean I'm going to do anything about it. I just would like to know is my S&P up or is it down? You know, that's really what it comes down to for me.
I honestly have to say that dating at this age now, I seek people that I can actually have a conversation with about anything, aside from the, you know, the sexual chemistry, which is, it's, that's pretty cool. That's pretty, you know, pretty awesome. Yeah. You know, like I said, we're spring break chicas over here. But the conversation part, you can just talk for hours about everything and and still enjoy each other's company. I think that's for me and a lot of older women. We want that. We crave that.
Yeah, I mean,
we don't want to just romp
in the
bed all the time. We just don't want to. We don't, I mean, that's good, again, but that's not all the time, and that's not always.
Well, after all that's done, like this guy who has a talk show often says, sooner or later you're going to have a meal with that person. You're going to have to sit down in front of them and have a meal with them. So, you know, let's do that now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
but I think it depends on the person. I mean, you know, we're all raised differently. We all have gone through different experiences in life, and it really kind of depends on what we've learned as a result of those experiences. I mean, there's the joke about, you know, like there's always the guy who's too old to be up in the club, you know, and that's kind of funny. That's kind of funny, but depends on what city you go to. You may have those clubs that cater to those old folks who are up in the club, and that's interesting. The only thing that I know is that when I was younger, I used to be after older women, but now that I'm older, I'm not after women my age because they're too old.
What does that mean?
This is the deal. This is the deal. I'm gonna tell you the deal.
Are you the one at the club that I ain't ask how you look, I ask how you feel. Okay, come on. No.
I'm the person that is like there was a point where you felt you were vibrant, where you felt you were special. There's a point that you felt you were in inviting, and you acted that way. You didn't necessarily quote unquote dress that way, but you acted that way, and you exuded that.
Okay.
There's a point in life now where those same women are like they have given in. They've given into either the stereotype or the system or whatever it is. They've given in and they're like, I ain't trying this no more. You know, I'm not hanging no more. Listen. I'm 10 years older than you, so keep remembering what we're talking about. You're just in your 50s. I'm in my 60s. There's a big difference. Big difference.
Well, if I could kind of interject with that,
I think there's a lot of
validity. As a matter of fact, there is a lot of validity to what you just shared, but also there's a lot of younger women that tend to, shall I say, for lack of better words, kind of neglect themselves or give up, or just not push themselves to their best potential. And it's, I don't know if it's acceptable or promoted, but it's like I got the right to be this way or that way, and you know, if you don't like it, it's a whole lot of things going on out here that don't make much sense. But to a mature man, it's not attractive.
I am just not that girl. I am constantly trying to, what's the word, without sounding pompous conceited. I am constantly trying to be sensual looking, because I think that. It makes me feel good, but I like the reaction that I get from guys, you know,
exactly.
Older guys, younger guys. I mean, you know, lately it's been like 27-year-old men, boy, with men. You know, it's like I don't get that. I mean, that's kind of young, but I mean, it's like you're my son.
You're still trying.
I don't even know that I'm doing it. My girlfriend was like, you don't even know what you're doing. You don't even realize what you're doing. And I don't, because I am that girl that is such a girly girl that I don't think women should not stop doing that or stop being that. Don't give it up. You know, always be on your game, on your A game. Always want the boys to kiss you on the cheek.
Right, that's your thing. I mean, you believe that, and you work on that. But a lot of people don't. There are a lot of guys that don't do it either, though.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because there are a lot of guys that don't believe that, and there are a lot of guys that think that, you know, either have a lot of money or whatever, that they don't have to keep up their appearance, and they got this, you know, look like they're 9 months pregnant belly, and then it's like, are we supposed to find you attractive? Mm. How am I going to find you attractive when you can't still see your private parts? How about that?
Right. And it's a lot of younger guys that are in that condition, and it's absolutely ridiculous.
Exactly. And I find more older men are starting to maintain their body or keeping themselves fit more so than younger men now.
Just to go back on your opening segment, I go to the doctor all the damn time. Okay, in fact, I had a specialist say to me one day, "Tell me, what else do you do in your spare time besides visit doctors?" She's looking at my charts, because I don't want any surprises. I mean, if we can stave off the surprises, that's what I want to do. Unlike my father, who, when we would go to the doctor, he would joke with the doctor, and I'm like, "Dad, look, you got some questions, ask the doctor."
Right.
You know, but my mother was a hypochondriac, so when we went to the doctor, she asked every question, and I turned into her. I'm that person. I go to the doctor all the time.
That is so refreshing to hear. Are you a doctor's person too, Mark? I mean, do you go check and all that all the time, or?
You know, there's
a lot afraid of the doctor?
Been said about. Yeah, and I absolutely have no understanding of the fear of the doctor. I have no understanding of, you know, wondering if you're sick or not and neglect.
Right.
That's just not me. It's 100% not me. If I feel that there's a need or reason that I need to be checked out, I'm trying to preserve myself, and not just at survival level. I want to be 100% functioning as best as possible, as long as possible. So I don't understand that. You know, I found myself talking with another friend, and she was making, you know, she was saying how the 50s are the new 30s, and that's absolutely true. It's true. You're in your 50s and you're healthy. Life is strong.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have no intentions on bowing out when I hit 50 or even 60, you know, but you have to make that happen. It doesn't just happen because you woke up. You have to make sure that happens. So,
exactly.
You know, if you live to be 80, you want the last 10, 15 years to be on dialysis. You want the last 10, 15 years to be on, you know, you can't even see your counter because you got so much medication on it.
Right.
So, you have a level of control, you know, whatever amount of control you can have on this situation, you want to take charge.
That is so important. I like the 50s, the new 30. What did you say, Niaiswa?
I want to be like Dick Van Dyke. They recently showed him at the crib. He's got himself a nice young woman as a wife. And he's 90 something. He dances around the crib just like he was on Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. I'm like, that's what I want. I want to do that. 91.
That's right.
Sure.
You're right. Absolutely right.
Well, yeah, you got to. I mean, and you're right. Yeah. It's like the whole adage, you're not as old as you feel is true. I mean, your mind, you know,
that's
you
true.
Can control anything that your mind thinks. I mean, if you're thinking that you're old and you can't get up and you can't do this or whatever, or you can't attract this or you can't have this, yeah, guess what? That's going to happen. Your mind, are what you think.
Except when you need a hip replacement.
And boom, goes the dynamite.
Take it from me.
Okay.
Except when you need a hip replacement.
And, you know, and also I think, you know, in all these topics that we're going over, I think that in society, I know that's kind of a vague and irresponsible place of accountability, but if society would really push these issues more a lot earlier, you know, in the schools, you know, because, like, the fact that, it's like, you know, when the doctor talked about people don't want to get their prostate checked out because some of the treatments might result in ED for them or something like that.
Right.
So that's not a deterrence for me. I didn't know that some of the treatments would have that type of effect on you. Or the fact that, or just the whole discussion on prostate cancer, period, that doesn't really cross our path until we hit like 30-something.
Mm-hmm. Or 40. I mean,
right.
Now it's like so, 50, say you get checked, yeah.
Right. And by the time that comes across your radar, you're locked into a train of thought. And it takes several exposures for something to really lock into your focus.
Yeah.
So I think if we had more aggressiveness implemented into the school system when we're a lot younger, and we don't have to put the responsibility on the school system, but just the note of delivering this message to the children, or when we're much younger, teenagers, you don't have to drill them, they don't have to do tests or whatever, but put these things on their mind. There's a lot of things that we need to really put into our kids again. So
it's been real. We have ran out of time. I thought I had a little bit more time. Doug has not cut us off yet. I'm actually shocked. But Doug has not cut us off yet, but we are out of time. I guess he's just letting us talk. But thank you so much, guys, for being a part of this podcast. It is our pre-Father's Day podcast. It is Men's Health Month, and this week is National Men's Health Week. And please log in to or go to ZeroProstateCancerRun.org or ZeroCancer.org to learn more about prostate cancer. And I am so happy that the people who tuned in and listened to podcast number 104, thank you so much for joining I'm Just Saying 50. Also, you can hear this podcast again on bbsradio.com, or you can log in and hear it live, or not live, I'm sorry. You can hear it again on iTunes. Give us about probably usually gets on iTunes usually the end of the day or the next day. But, yeah, you can definitely hear all these podcasts on iTunes. And I am Facebook Live, so you can also hear what we talked about, too. You just can't hear the guest, but you can hear me. So, again, thank you so much for being a part of I'm Just Saying 50. I am Juanita. And until the next time, you take care. Bye.